welcome to another edition of the Sports Road Podcast. I am your host for this week, Tom Bassam. This week's show is all about sustainability. It's Sustainability Week over at Sports Pro HQ. For this, we decided to get on board a couple of our friends from the Green Football Weekend, which is an initiative based in England, encouraging fans to approach the game in a more sustainable way. This year, that was about their food choices, but previously, it's just been about encouraging fans to think about being more sustainable in how they approach their team. I was lucky enough to be joined by the CEO of Pledgeball, Katie Cross, and Helen Taylor, who is the former chief executive of Forest Green Rovers and current ambassador for Ecosystem and the club, to talk about Green Football Weekend and also the issue of sustainability in football and what can be done from the industry to tackle what is not just an industry problem at all, but a much bigger issue. That's coming up after this short break. Sorry to interrupt your podcast, but if you haven't heard, next month we are heading to Manhattan for Sports Pro New York. On the 18th and 19th of March, you can hear from industry innovators such as Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark, Candle Media CEO and former top Disney executive Kevin Mayer, as well as LPGA Tour Commissioner Molly Marcoux-Saman. Come to be inspired and learn how to successfully navigate the major opportunities in sports media. Book your place today at newyork.sportspro.com. Listeners to this podcast can get 20% off using code PODCAST at checkout. Terms and conditions apply, and this offer is not applicable to pre-existing purchases. Katie Cross, Helen Taylor, welcome to the Sports Pro Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Let's start, Katie. If you could just give us a little bit of background. I mean, we're going to come on and talk about the Green Football Weekend in a minute, but if you could give us a little bit of your background and tell us a little bit about Pledgeball too.
Pledgeball is a research-backed charity that essentially supports sports bodies, companies, communities with engaging people around climate and sustainability. I mean, our kind of charitable objective really is the ambitious target of bringing about a social and cultural shift, one where we essentially value things very differently. We prioritize planet sustainability in our decision making rather than prioritizing value. This sounds like a very difficult thing to achieve, but science suggests there is a kind of 25% inflection point. So if you get just 25% of people, whether it's a group of people, an entire population, simply adopting a new social norm, it triggers that social shift. You know, I think it's about 3.5% of people protesting and you trigger that same shift. So adopting a new social norm is literally just starting to prioritize sustainability in the way that they think. And actually, there was a really interesting BBC News article today where Flamini talks about exactly that in his purchases that he makes when he buys clothes. For example, he says it takes a very long time before he purchases something because he considers the value of it and the impact. So that's what Pledgeball aims to do. And the way it does this, it addresses the reasons why people don't take climate action. And it's not because they don't care. We know, and in fact, from Sports Pro Live last year, we know that well over 88% of your delegates last year, they were concerned or extremely concerned around climate change. And this is reflected in the wider research. The two main reasons why people don't take action based on that concern are, one, this paralysis that people feel in the face of climate. They feel that as individuals, they can't have an impact, and therefore they experience this cognitive dissonance where they essentially are not receptive to messages around it. They turn off to it because it's simply something that's just too big for them. Secondly, is this disconnect between themselves and climate action, seeing climate action as essentially the preserve of environmentalists. And so what Pledgeball does is shift those perspectives and, you know, really drive action as a result of it. How it came about was completely accidental. It was in response to my own feelings, to be honest, around climate. And as a result of that, I shared some information with my grassroots football team, who then helped me to set up a grassroots football tournament. The only entry fee was to make a pledge. We awarded the team who pledged to save the most emissions as well as the team who won the tournament. And it grew from there, really. And we now work with leading researchers to ensure that what we do works, but also to ensure that we use existing research in our strategy.
Lovely stuff. Helen, you were, as I understand, the first CEO of Forest Green Rovers when they joined the Football League. And for listeners maybe outside of the UK and who don't know, are you officially the greenest club in the world?
It is a title that we were granted, if you like. FIFA gave us that title quite way back, actually, even before we got into the English Football League, through all the work that we've done. So we got involved, Dale got involved, Dale Vince, who's the chairman of Forest Green and owner of Ecosystem Ecotricity, founder of Ecotricity. We got involved back in 2010 to a club then that was 123 years old and sitting in the National Conference League at the time. And we just kind of thought when we got involved, it was just 4 miles down the road from our Ecotricity offices. And we thought, right, okay, we'll turn it into a green football club. Didn't really have that ambition initially, but it just kind of happened. We could do things that would kind of change the face of football. And in doing that, it's quite an improbable environment to do it. And it's given us quite a lot of opportunity to kind of engage with fans around being green, but not imposing it, just, living their 2 hours of a match and before and after as they wish to kind of experience what can happen and how you can be greener. So, we've got that kind of title. We've held it for some time now. We're the world's first carbon neutral football club, all for the things that we do that really showcase what you can do to be sustainable.
I think one of the things that I've always found quite inspiring about Forest Green is the fact that you're still out there on your own a little bit. There are more and more clubs that become interested in this area and are like pursuing this kind of stuff, but it's definitely not front and centre of what they do, whereas it completely is for Forest Green, right?
I mean, it is. It is part of our DNA, if you like. That's what we would do. I mean, there is no question if we were involved from it. And we say that from a we being Ecotricity perspective, really, because Ecotricity sort of stepped in and support the club in every way possible. Dale is, founder of Ecotricity, green energy company. It is what we do day to day. And we have this wider vision. And that vision is for a green Britain. So that's looking at energy, transport, food, which are the three major contributors to your carbon footprint. So it was very natural for us just to move that into football. But we work really hard with other clubs. We've worked with the community trusts. We've set some criteria for other trusts to be able to kind of move their sustainability agenda forward. And we have education programs that we put into and are available through the Primary Stars program, for example. So we've done as much as we can and continue to do to kind of share what we're about. So yeah, we might be the leaders, but we want everyone else to be with us, really.
That leads us quite neatly onto the Green Football Weekend. Like that, I'm guessing, is part of taking that story, and it is backed by Forest Green and Ecotricity and Pledgeball, turning it into like a nationwide campaign that all fans can get involved with. Just explain what the Green Football Weekend is and give us a bit of background.
So Green Football Weekend is in its second year. We kicked off last year. It was kind of founded by a very kind of loose collaboration between a number of us. So ourselves, the Football Supporters Association, who we're partnered with, Sky, TNT, Sports, Counterton, and Planet League. The aim of it really was to create this moment that brings conversation around sustainability into the mainstream and really highlights what we can do as a collective and particularly as a football fan collective. Last year, like I said, was the first year. And I mean, It exceeded what we expected to be perfectly frank. It was quite unreal. It focuses around a Green Football Weekend Cup. So very similarly to how the Pledgeball League works throughout the season, on that particular weekend, fans compete for this Green Football Weekend Cup. And we essentially have a takeover of that on our website. They do that by making, pro-environmental choices. Last year, Manu won it. I think this year they also won it. They were kind of neck and neck with Northampton Town. We kept piggybacking over each other, and huge, huge shout outs to Northampton Town, because that's amazing. But yeah, it was absolutely incredible. And this year, just the increase in noise and the quality of conversation that it sparked was absolutely incredible. We see on mainstream coverage of the games, so much conversation happening. This year our focus was around, reducing meat consumption essentially by eating more vegetarian food. We had an amazing Green Football Weekend cookbook with over 72 recipes in there from clubs, players, club nutritionists, celebrity chefs who were fans of certain clubs. It's a pretty great cookbook. Like I said, the reach was incredible. I think the thing that was a real success for me this year was to see how many conversations happened in media that reached so many different audiences and from different angles, and to see fans really stepping up and calling clubs out for things as well, really identifying things where clubs could improve as well, I think is just crucial.
weirdly enough, I noticed it on beIN Sport, which is the Qatari broadcaster. They were talking about it on there, which, like, I mean, I wasn't watching it. Don't worry, don't come after me, private police. But it showed up on my social timeline. And I was like, I mean, if they're talking about it on the Qatari broadcast, which is like, doesn't go out to the UK, if it goes out to like the whole Middle East or North Africa, and they're talking about this initiative, like, that's real cut through that perhaps sustainability initiatives haven't got before. Helen, where do FGR and Ecotricity fit into the whole Green Football Weekend piece?
Yeah, I mean, we had the honour of being the main sponsor. So Ecotricity took that really because we feel, you know, it really does play into our Green Britain ethos. So we were able to provide support from that perspective. And that, obviously, FGR were involved, but we put in quite a lot of effort from across the group, actually, to make sure that every part of our group were involved in some way. We have a vegan food company that's called Devil's Kitchen that produces vegan food largely for schools, food service, but also through Ocado. And it was a great opportunity for clubs to know that that food was there available for them to use, particularly over the weekend, but at any time. It was great to be able to kind of promote the benefit of vegan food, what's out there, and all of that. You know, the whole idea of Devil's Kitchen, this company, really was spun out of the outlets and the food outlets we actually have at Forest Green. So it was inspired by what we do at Forest Green. So it's a great way to kind of showcase that side of things, as well as talk about, you know, green energy, how you're traveling to matches, that kind of thing, which are all things that we talk about all the time at Forest Green, but it just gave a little bit more emphasis for every club to start to think about it. And for us, it was great. We didn't have a home match that weekend, which was a real shame, but you know, we were still up at Colchester. We took ambassador children. So we've got a schools ambassador program through the Community Trust, and we took them with us to the ground, and we had a great lady, Katie, who actually cycled, Katie Strong, actually cycled from Stroud over to Colchester, and she took the football for that game, which attracted a lot of attention because obviously it was a great way to travel very sustainably. It's not ideal for everyone to want to go that far, but it really highlighted to those school children and people that saw her leave and those that she met on the way. And when she got to the match, she was kind of able to profile, you know, a very strong message around sustainability.
This year's campaign was all around, as you said, changing out your food option in order to go with the more environmentally sustainable option. As a vegetarian, I know that is the fastest way to reduce your carbon footprint. Just to give some kind of sense of scale, like, how much of an impact could that have if all 72 clubs, I got that right, 72 or 92?
92.
Yeah. All 92 clubs, including the Premier League, switched out their meat options. Would that have a really big, significant influence on the whole footprint for the UK football industry?
From an individual perspective, you know, we look earlier this year and there was a UK-specific stat that came out showing that if people who ate meat on a regular basis simply cut their meat consumption in half, it equates to taking over, I think it was 800 million cars off the road. I mean, it was a huge number. I think the other thing that's an understatement here is A, the influence that the clubs have. You know, normalising eating more vegetarian food as opposed to eating meat with every meal or meat every day of the week. But also the impact that has on systemic change. I mean, individual and systemic change are completely interlinked. And this is also what's really important when we're looking at individual behaviour change, is that what we ultimately want to do is accelerate the systemic change so that the options are there for people to make the sustainable choices. Those, you know, those choices that aren't negatively impacting, you know, the air that we breathe, our food infrastructures, etc. And to do that, we need this demand. We need to show that we care, you know, from the ground up, essentially. And so the direct impact on emissions is really significant. There's a huge amount of unmeasurable impact there in the normalisation of it and the impact it has on the procurement from the businesses that the clubs buy from, for example. All of that is really huge, and where football is kind of unique in its potential to really accelerate systemic change.
Is that why this year's Green Football Weekend targeted that in particular as opposed to, say, travel?
So that's a really interesting question. We had a big debate around what we focused on, because last year we didn't actually have a focus. We kind of focused around the cup. You know, that's great because it's really accessible to people, and that continues to be so. But we discussed food because it is such high impact from an individual perspective. I had an interesting podcast I did with two farmers who host a podcast, actually. One of them questioned me around Heather wasn't nuanced in the messaging. You know, she said, well, you know, there are some types of meat. There's a certain amount of consumption we could do that is not as damaging. And I said, absolutely, there's nuance around it. But if we went out with a message around that, it's not as clear cut and it's not as strong. The normalization around eating more vegetables, reducing meat consumption dramatically, sparks these conversations, which is brilliant. But also, like I said, moves it away from those associations you have with vegetarianism and veganism to a place where it becomes much more normal. And what was great was we saw loads of footballers speaking out about how they've done it. They've gone plant-based to reduce inflammation. You know, the health benefits of it, the reduction in carcinogens from eating more vegetables, less meat. All of those start to come out, and those really what resonate with people. You know, they're things that you wouldn't argue with, essentially.
It's quite an accessible thing, isn't it? It was the first thing we did when we got involved with Forest Green is we took red meat off the menu, and then we gradually moved the fish away, the chicken away, always kept chips, which keeps everyone very happy, and then ultimately then changed our milk. So the dairy side of things, it does really resonate. I remember when we got into the English Football League and all the press came to talk about the fixtures, the first set of fixtures we'd have in that league, they actually were more interested in the fact that we were a vegan football club than that we were in the league. It just plays into more people's kind of consciousness as well, I think. It's quite an easy way for people to kind of think differently when they make their own minds up.
Yeah, I guess the sort of prime example of that is Duncan Ferguson eating the veggie burger on his first day in the job. That kind of story gets a lot of cut through.
Yeah.
I guess the only issue is that it can trivialise the seriousness of that messaging a little bit. And one of the things that I wanted to ask was, is focusing on fans a little bit like asking people to stop using plastic straws when really, like, the issues in like sustainability in sports really coming at the business in the club end? Like, the plastic straw thing is an easy way of telling that narrative, but you've got clubs like Wrexham, who are in the same division as Forest Green Rovers, using private jets to get to the games. Like, there's probably not too many clubs in League One that do that, but in the Premier League, that's rife. That has a much, much larger impact on greenhouse gas emissions than, say, a fan travel would. Do you guys see that as a risk? Is that just a kind of the next step of where we need to go to with this kind of campaign?
I don't think it's a risk. I think it's absolutely ultimately the responsibility of every club to do what they should do to reduce their carbon footprint. And they need to make the fan experience incredible in the sense of whatever they're doing, they make that experience, and when their fans come to a game or when they engage with the club, that, you know, they have the ease of being able to be part of their mission. But I think it does start with the club. It really does start with the club, and it does start right at the top. So it's not going to work unless everybody at director level, board level, is really bought in. That's significant, because obviously fans look in and, well, you know, if they idolise a player or they idolise and really love their particular club, they will more likely follow the pattern of what they're doing. So I do think it's very important. It's kind of like bottom up and then top down. It kind of has to come from both directions. And I think the Green Football Weekend is just a great way, and probably not many opportunities really come around where the fans get to have to do too much. So they get this opportunity to kind of showcase their way of doing things and their beliefs. That's where it really starts, because we almost need to create the blueprint for then the fans to see how they can replicate what they see in their lives as much as they do when they come to a game.
I think the other thing to point out is that whilst primarily it's around fan mobilisation, like the Green Foot Weekend and same with Pledge Ball, it's not about placing onus on fans. It's literally an invite to say, do you fancy making your voice heard? Come and join us. And this goes back to what I said about systemic change. You know, how else are you going to encourage this systemic change? You know, at the moment, clubs prioritise performance on the pitch. And therefore, if they can get margins through flying to games, that's what they will do, unless fans call them out for it. And this is what we saw at the first Green Foot Weekend. You know, fans were calling out clubs for flying. And we saw loads of discussion around this year. Earlier in the year, Forest Green Rovers were one of the initial signees of our sustainable travel charter. You know, the aim of that was to reduce the number of flights that are taken within English football. And we worked with some EFL clubs. We targeted the EFL rather than the Premier League, because I don't imagine the Premier League will come on board initially. We've had a lot of conversations with a number of Premier League clubs as a result of this, who come to us and said, I'm waiting to see which one jumps first. You know, it wasn't all that long ago that we didn't fly to fixtures. You know, it wasn't the done thing. But now it's so normalised that it will take a club to step out and then the rest will follow. But we need people to show that they care because we need that pressure. So Greenfoot Weekend isn't at all about putting onus on the fans. It's instead about providing them an opportunity to illustrate their demand for change, their demand for a structure of football, a running of clubs that doesn't negatively impact those things that we value. You know, like I said, the air that we breathe, those green spaces, those are not prioritised in the running of the clubs. And, you know, those things that matter a lot to us will be damaged ultimately if we continue to prioritise financial sustainability and performance on the pitch.
It's a very good point that I think. You can't expect clubs to listen to the fans if the fans aren't making the noise in the first place. To start with them makes a lot of sense, I think. You said you need a big club to kind of step out into doing this, and that working with the EFL, you found a little bit more success. What's the resistance that you get from them? Is it literally, we think this is so significantly damaging to our performance on the pitch that we actually just don't care?
I mean, I think Pep Guardiola gave a perfect example of this when I think he commented around Man City flying when they had to take a coach to Newcastle, I think it was, because of the disruption that weekend. Clubs are currently judged on financial sustainability and performance on the pitch. And until that changes, we won't see significant budget or consideration given to addressing environmental sustainability. And, you know, within a few years, people will be turning around and going, what on earth were we doing? Why didn't someone warn me this is what was happening? Because it is insane at the moment, if you look at it and look at what organisations are allowed to do, that is hugely detrimental, all in the name of performance. I do think that will change. I mean, the Bundesliga, we've seen obviously introduce sustainability licensing criteria. UEFA have asked that all clubs within the European tournaments, you know, in order to get to be licensed, they have to now have a head of sustainability and a sustainability plan. They have said that this is going to basically get more ambitious year on year. It is the sensible next step. And I mean, if you look at kind of legalities around this, and I'm no expert, this is just something from a conversation with an organization I've had. But when you look at financial sustainability and fiduciary duty, I mean, anybody who is not anticipating the issues that not addressing climate is going to bring is not meeting that fiduciary duty. So I have no doubt that regulation is very soon going to catch up with those who are not already prioritising this.
Helen, as someone that's been involved with running a football club, do you feel like if when push comes to shove, like you have to make those choices, or do you feel like you can go the other way? You can say like, well, I might know the answer based on the club that you work for, but
I mean, when you're in a room with all the other, you know, people running a football club, and finance is always the first thing that's talked about, and clearly performance matters, but in particularly in, this is more operationally talking about what to do, it hasn't been a priority at all for any of them. And it's become more of an interest, I think, from some senior board members, chairs of football clubs, who have perhaps a more personal interest. That's where a lot of this comes from, and we see that across business as well. You know, a business might change if somebody's got some sort of personal association with wanting to do something different because they recognise the importance of addressing the issues around climate change. So it's kind of easier for us. You know, we would never compromise, albeit, you know, we've still got to keep up the standard that everyone else is working to be able to kind of compete and be in the same league. But the rules and the regulations don't really give you any leeway towards being that sustainable. Although there are more conversations now within the English Football League about criteria, sharing criteria about how to be more sustainable across the clubs. And there is a system and a sort of a new accreditation, if you like, green clubs that clubs can comply to or apply to be able to kind of measure their success. And I think that's starting to move things a little bit in the right direction.
Is it happening all a bit too slowly?
It's very slow. It's very slow because you get changes in personnel more than anything, I think. You get changes in people. So, you know, you get that impetus and then something happens and that person's not there anymore. And it's sometimes slow because, you know, further downwards, the suppliers are not there waiting for you to be able to kind of work with you on new ways of doing things. But we found suppliers for everything we do. You know, we've got electric powered kit for our ground. We've got solar panels for our football club. You can get those quite easily. We have a green energy supply because we are a green energy company, but, you know, that's available to everyone in any league. And food, you know, nowadays, it's very easy to find your vegan or vegetarian options. And I think even just thinking about changing one or two items on the menu is a really good step forward and is happening. So there are quite a few clubs that are really just reacting to their fans wanting different food, for example. It's getting there, but it is very, very slow. I mean, we've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, we started this in 2010. How it is we're still the greenest football club in the world and no one's really kind of caught up with us is a bit out of this, you know, out of the world, really. You'd expect it now to be different.
One of the major changes coming to English football this year is going to hopefully be a regulator. We don't know exactly when that's going to happen. But I haven't heard anything coming out of that that's going to nod to environmental sustainability at all. Is that a missed opportunity?
Yeah, it would be a massively missed opportunity because then it would almost enable clubs to justify putting budget towards addressing sustainability. You know, you almost need this mandate because otherwise the fear of competitive advantage, obviously, as we discussed, deprioritizes addressing sustainability. So it is a hugely missed opportunity. Again, I'd also be surprised if it wasn't something that is incorporated into it because, the IRF is primarily being set up to govern financial sustainability of clubs. But the two are, particularly now, completely interlinked. So it would be very remiss not to have it included within that remit anyway.
As sort of almost a campaigning level, what can be done? We've been talking about the Green Football Weekend and how that creates that kind of bottom-up call for action. You said it's quite hard to get the cut through at the top end. As a podcast that speaks to the industry, like, what steps do you think can be done there to make sure you get the sort of impact of the Premier League? Is it going to take a club to come out and say, we're no longer doing this?
To a degree, I would say yes. And I think it's worth looking at some of the practices that every club is operating because there can be savings financially as well towards being green. So I think it's important maybe for a club to look at the round and really put somebody in who's responsible. I think at this point in time, there aren't very many sustainability experts or people responsible for the sustainability across a club. And just having a point of contact who then can share with information so that EFL's got people who they can talk to. There's a lead within the English Football League, Ben Fisher, who they can talk to, again in the Premier League. And I think it's just a question of trying to have that ripple effect across every aspect of how you run the club and just getting them to think about where sustainability can fit in there. It's a bit like the schools program we ran where everything we do, you know, all of our lessons cover all of the different subject areas. And it's the same in this, the same in the business, is, you know, just bring sustainability to the top level, to the board level, and have someone reporting from each of their areas what they're doing to tackle some of the environmental criteria that has to be done to kind of move things forward. And it would make life so much easier. But then again, I think it's also, they need more education, everyone does. They need more support to understand, but that also equally is being provided through the English Football League in particular.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think also the expertise in-house are really important, you know, recruiting somebody who has those expertise, but also ensuring that they have board level support, that actually when something is taken from the expert who you can make the right assessment and that's taken to the commercial department, the board, that those are respected and it has weight so that you are making those correct decisions. The other aspect, which of course Helen touched upon, is the engagement across the whole staff team, because it's actually not rocket science to start to consider making more sustainable choices operationally day to day. But in order to do that, you need to again look at the individual, move them away from that feeling of paralysis to a feeling where they feel like they can have an impact, because that's where you start to see the ripple going out across the business, is when each individual, they don't even necessarily need to have the full expertise, but if they're aware that they could have an impact and there is a more sustainable choice, then they research it, they look it up, and it's considered in every single decision. And very quickly, you'd see huge reductions in emissions. It wouldn't be the battle they could be in reducing operational emissions.
We've talked about clubs quite a lot here. On the other side of this is the sort of broader industry and I guess the thing that brings it into people's living rooms, which is the broadcasters. You've got TNT and Sky both signed up for the Green Football Weekend. Sky obviously have their Zero campaign, which looks to produce a carbon emission zero game. They've done that once or twice, to my knowledge. Do they do enough currently? I mean, aside from the supporting these endeavours, are they doing enough to provide that educational piece, but also be leaders when it comes to introducing sustainable practices? Because like, they travel up and down, they fly people out to games. What's the interaction with that side of the industry like?
I mean, first, I don't know enough about their in-house operations to comment really accurately on this, but they have, in the first instance, made strides. So with the setting up of Albert, a lot of the traveling has been dramatically cut. So they do a lot of kind of cloud editing, you know, which I think came about through COVID as well, really facilitated this. So they send a massively reduced team to the fixtures now, which has cut emissions, I believe, quite dramatically. When you say, is anyone doing enough? I mean, it's hard to hold up organisations that are doing enough. So I won't comment on that one. I was asked an interesting question by Barry Glendening and Max Rushton around some of the things that some of the fans have been calling out. You know, the Newcastle fans held up a banner saying TV before fans, referring to the fact that the fixtures are often scheduled so late for TV audiences, but it means that fans can't travel via public transport home. And this is a really interesting one, and again goes back to fans bringing up these conversations. My answer to that currently would be, well, broadcasters had the guts to get behind this campaign, and without that, there's no way we'd have the conversations happening and the challenges happening and the movement we're seeing unless they've done that. So they really should be heralded for doing that. I mean, yes, of course, this is a whole holistic issue that we need to look at. And every organisation needs to look at how emissions can be cut and what needs to happen. I think this resonates on an individual level as well, because if you hold up your hand and say, well, sorry, you can only take action if you're perfect, because otherwise you're going to be criticised, then that immediately halts people in their tracks. What we do need to see is this, yes, challenging. People need to make sure that they are ambitious and doing everything they possibly can, but also a real appreciation for transparency and for that drive.
Helen, if I can come to you and ask a question about how you initiate change, especially on a subject like sustainability, where it can feel a bit preachy at times. As a club that's been doing this for a while, do you get invited to go and talk to people in that way? Or do you feel like you are still, oh, it's Forest Green, they're just trying to be better than everyone else? Like, is there that kind of atmosphere? And how do you change that?
That's interesting. I would say we are invited quite a lot to talk about what we're doing. You know, an example, I'm doing a talk in a couple of weeks' time, and it's in a training company that wants to talk about how we've initiated change within a football club environment and how can they do that within their environment, and how very often Forest Green is kind of put out and kind of held up as a bit of a sort of shining light of doing something in such an improbable environment. I guess in football, you might get the sense of people thinking, oh yeah, it's them again, you know, they're doing everything green. But we actually try not to be like that. We are literally what we are. If you came to a game, you wouldn't feel as everything was being forced on you. So I guess it's probably people really looking at us and going, right, how can I kind of take that template and put it into my world, whatever my world might be? That's quite exciting. You know, I get to talk to, Dale gets to talk to lots and lots of organisations, and, you know, get lots of universities come, you know, people visiting regularly, with schools coming all the time from far afield, coming to find out how it is that we're green and what do we do that's different, as well as kind of key people. You know, we've got international fan base all around the world who are very often let us know if they're coming over to visit because they want to kind of engage with the conversation. But of course, we're still talking to quite like-minded individuals when we do that, or organisations that are kind of on the road to being greener. But I think that's slowly changing. It's useful for us. You know, we have a football club. We've got a business who is maybe powered by Ecotricity. We can bring them to the football club and they get this kind of wider experience of what else they can do to change the way they do things. So I think it's played a really significant role for us. We see it as the sort of manifestation of our vision for a green Britain. You can't see the energy that we sell, but you can see how something can be run and run really effectively and be green.
You had Dortmund visiting you recently, yeah. Didn't you? Yeah. Delegates from Dortmund catching the train over.
Exactly. Yeah, we get visitors all through.
All right, lovely stuff. I think before we end, I'd kind of like to get each of your like final thoughts. So I'm hoping there's going to be a Green Football Weekend next year. But by the time that comes around, what would you sort of both call for as like one sort of big but relatively simple change that you'd like to see in the sports industry to make it greater step towards sustainability?
I think I'd like to see more joined upness in the way that we share information about being green. I think that will make the biggest difference. I think if there is a kind of group, and there are people, there are individuals who are really kind of passionate about this, but actually, how do we really join up in the English Football League, within the Premier League, within other sports as well, to make it much easier to become green? It's almost like a kind of consortium of representatives who kind of really want to push this forward.
Katie?
I think mine would be an acceptance of the commercial benefits as well as the necessary benefits, if we put it, of including environmental sustainability within a key KPI of the club as a whole. I think that acceptance would mean, as I said, that it would unlock budget and expertise to enable to deliver. And, you know, just as we've seen Forest Green, just as we've seen with clubs like Liverpool, the commercial benefits of ensuring that it is authentically addressed are significant.
It's been a real pleasure. I found that really fascinating. So thank you very much for coming along.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here. Thanks.